You're listening to the summary of the interview. For a link to the full-length episode, please check the description below. We're going to listen to an interview with Eric Jackson of Pipeline Foods, where we are discussing large-scale conversion of land to organic farming. What holds farmers back while the demand is growing so rapidly? Welcome to another episode of Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the Planet Mattered, a podcast show where I talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why am I focused on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land, grow our food, and what we eat. And it's time that we, as investors, big and small, and consumers, start paying much more attention to the dirt / soil underneath our feet. Before we get started, I've been recording these interviews next to my day job, and I will definitely continue to do so and release about an episode a month. But at the same time, I would love to take this further, share more interviews. There are many more stories to share on investing in regenerative food and agriculture. More depth, improve the quality, maybe even doing some video series. So I started a Patreon community, which makes it easy to support creators like myself. If these podcasts have been of value to you, and if you have the means, I invite you to support me and make this happen. For more information, please find the link to my Patreon account in the description below. And now, without further ado, the interview. Enjoy!
Well, like many of folks my age who've been in agriculture for a career, when we started in the business, in my case 35 years ago, we were never given any information, and it really wasn't a topic of conversation about how agriculture and sustainability could work together. But agriculture, particularly production agriculture, as a carbon sink, was something that was relatively new across the sustainability community. The idea of using minimum tillage in concert with nature, as opposed to fighting nature every step of the way during the growing season, was producing every bit as much yield for these guys as a conventional, and their cost structure was much lower because they weren't having to buy all these inputs. Multi-generational farms, you know, that would do something for a long period of time, the same year after year, and then they recognize that some of the things that their grandfather used to do was actually better. Started bumping in more and more to folks that were at least diversified into organic row crop production. I was looking at the marketplace and watching the growth in the industry, double-digit growth year over year for many, many years. And again, with my commercial hat on, I was wondering what was being done in terms of the infrastructure
and the supply, yeah.
For the supply, right? So the midstream between the farmer and the consumer, there's a lot of steps that happen, and I was fascinated to try to figure out and see if that infrastructure had been keeping up with the whole marketplace. And I found out that it hadn't. That both sides of the pipe can benefit if the pipe is built in such a way that it honors the desires on the demand side and honors the desires on the supply side. So today, after not quite 18 months in business, we have a headquarters here in Minneapolis. We have a team in Canada that manages our Canadian program. We have a team in Buenos Aires that manages our South American program. And we've created a partnership with a like-minded group out of Europe that gives us a global program in terms of being able to work directly with growers today in about 20 countries. So we said, let's be completely transparent and create sort of a two-way telescope consistent with the thesis of a pipe, I guess, and give both visibility to each other and strengthen the food system in a way that hasn't really been done, at least at a commercial scale before. So, again, today, like you said, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 50, just over 50 people. We have four grain elevators. I'm sorry, two in Saskatchewan and two in North Dakota. We have a small oilseed crushing operation in Missouri.
I'm quoting here, perhaps one of the hardest parts of this journey is to walk into a local coffee shop and getting the cold shoulder for doing something different. How do you work on that psychology piece that I'm going to be the weird one in the village and the community because I'm going organic and going to have a very messy field?
One of the things that we're starting to do is to create a community and connecting all, you know, various farmers to each other, giving them the opportunity to understand that although they may be odd in the local coffee shop, that in the global coffee shop, they're not that odd.
And in terms of what means regenerative agriculture for Pipeline Foods, and what are your plans in that?
To make change is when you can connect the demand side to the supply side, because the primary exchange is money, right? And without money, your the universe of participants shrinks to only those who are mission driven, which is important, but in my mind, not sufficient. So we're trying to figure out how the signals are going to get sent, if you will. And regenerative is a relatively new signal in the commercial world. Our approach at this point is a little bit of a wait and see, not because individually as people we aren't sympathetic to many of the ideals expressed in the regenerative conversation. I tell my team, at some level, we shouldn't care about motivation as long as the outcomes are aligned with our business philosophy and our ethos. So if a grower, for example, is solely motivated by money, and that's the way that we can get that grower to behave in a different way that creates an economic opportunity for the grower and an abundance of additional environmental outcomes, we shouldn't care. We shouldn't be so altruistic that we need for to stand up and salute, you know, some sort of flag or some sort of icon. We should really care about the outcomes of the endeavor. And so with soil health being really the topic that's driving that conversation, now getting commercialized by major food companies and major participants in the value chain, out of that conversation now, in the U.S., one of the things that has become more apparent now to the rural communities is that their groundwater, so in addition, take away the surface water discussion and go to groundwater, many of the rural community wells that would be supplying a small town are impaired in terms of water quality, and there's no secret about what the source of that impairment is. It's clearly agricultural leaching. You know, if I could snap my fingers and turn the entire world organic overnight, I do not believe at this point, I wouldn't have said this a few years ago, but I do not believe at this point that you would see any decrease in production. And in fact, I would argue that over the long term, this is the only way that things can work over the long term. But you'd see an immediate impact in terms of environmental outcomes. And I think people would be astounded and understand that they've been fed a bunch of stories that aren't necessarily true about the need for using synthetic production methods, to be able to feed the world. This whole feed the world concept is a red herring. Another interesting point of tension is because you've got the what I'll call the legacy organic crowd, who are typically farming smaller acreage and very intensive, maybe 40 different crops on an acre, right? But it's mostly designed for local use.
And fruit and vegetables, yeah.
And fruits and vegetables, and that's great.
And not grain.
But yeah. It's great. I mean, that's the food I want to eat, and I'm glad that those programs are up and going. But that is not going to make a systemic change on a local, regional, or certainly global level. You have to get the broadacre.
What kind of size you are dealing with?
Yeah. So I mean, some of these figures are estimates, but in our most recent review of the acreage that we are currently working with. North America, I believe it's 1.4, give or take 1.4 million acres. You know, investment in soil health, I mean, you can create a whole wheel of fortune, if you will, with lots of slivers of benefits, all coming from essentially the same thing. You know, and so if you can pool capital and that capital can be put to work to help sponsor the initiation, because our biggest problem in the U.S. is we do not have enough acres that are organic to support our domestic demand. So we're importing. Now, granted, we're always going to import things we can't grow here, but we import 75% of our organic corn and soybeans. But the point is, we are the king of soybeans and corn, and yet we're importing organic soybeans and organic corn because they don't grow enough here.
You just listened to the summary of the interview. For the full-length interview, please find the link in the description below. If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my Patreon community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on patreon.com/regenerativeagriculture or in the description below. Thank you so much and see you at the next podcast.